Before we start, let's do mic checks real quick.
All right, testing, 1, 2, can you hear me?
Testing, I'm good. I think I'm good.
Yep. Reese, good morning.
Hello.
Or good afternoon.
Hey, good morning. We all got a coffee, right?
Not me, but that's because I've been up all day.
Oh man, let's see. Hang on. I swear to God, we're gonna have to do these mic checks as a standard operating procedure. Considering like we've always had like all kinds of mic.
Pickups. I do it when I started early, just because we have the opportunity and elevator music. If I don't have anything prepared, which I don't, because my phone that has everything else up right now. Mm-hmm. I don't have it charged fully, so I can't mess. I can't. If I play music, it's gonna die.
I need it for
the intro.
I gotcha. All right, we'll give it a couple of more minutes and then we'll start.
Sounds good. I mean, we don't have to be boring though. How's everyone's weekend going?
Oh, it's already hitting the ground running for me. I know Ness, you started a new position. How's that coming along?
I'm pretty tired, dude. Yeah, it's a late night thing. I can't really talk about it too much though, because there's NDAs involved.
I know that feeling.
Are you working for Nintendo?
I wish.
Maybe that's a question I'll ask Reese here in a bit. Once we get started, because I'm curious, like how many, like when you're working on an open source blockchain, like you know. Do they make you sign NDAs? Because like oftentimes, like I see devs come out and start speaking on behalf of the project they're working on. And I've always wanted, and that did cross my mind a couple of times, like do they ever sign an NDA? Or is ever an NDA ever involved? Maybe it could be depending on the project.
No, I've worked on multiple projects, including like my own freelance stuff. I've never had an NDA ever even like
Really?
Into that. So I've never had to do any of that, even for closed source projects that I've worked on.
Really? They never make you sign anything?
No. Like with Ethos, they're currently closed source and we didn't have to sign any NDAs. Of course, like from the business side, like we don't want to share too much, but at the same time, sure. Like no NDAs were required from any parties, as well as like contractor-based stuff that I've done. Like, no, that's not really a thing here. Which it could just be like people don't want to deal with the legal, or they're just like, hey, trust me, bro, continue on. So I assume it's kind of a mix of both.
Right, and then there's been no what's the other one they signed, like a non-compete?
That is not a thing at all here. Like you can work on two competing projects at the same time. It's pretty wild. Like Juno, they were kind of like hinted at it of like you can work wherever you want, but like maybe not Archway or Neutron, wink wink, hint hint. So that's kind of the only thing, but that's more of a ethics standpoint versus a like the contract requires that.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. All right. That's really interesting. Cause I know like I'm working like for like these bigger entities, like whether it be Google or Microsoft. I mean, I know there's like so many NDAs and non-competes that you have to sign off. I'm pretty sure you know what I'm talking about.
I think crypto might gravitate towards that in like, you know, 20 to 30 years. Just when it, you know, when people.
Maybe sooner.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, probably sooner knowing crypto. But I'm gonna roll into it because we do have a few people listening.
Yes. Yep.
Good morning. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Reese, thanks for joining us today. Before we start, I want to give a shout out to Vin and the L1 Task Force for all their hard work and contribution to the chain and validators that supported them.
And
disclaimer.
Are you gonna
do it?
I could. Yeah. No. I was just. That's all right. Yeah. Quick disclaimer.
You're just
this
used
podcast.
To doing it.
Yeah, I know. It's like a force of habit. But a quick disclaimer, this podcast should not be considered financial advice. The contents of this broadcast here and or any other platforms are for educational and entertainment purposes only. Insight our personal opinions. In order to make the best financial decisions that suit your needs, please conduct your own research and seek the advice from a licensed financial advisor if necessary. Dude, Reese, thanks for being here.
Hello. I want to start
this. You're awake. You sound like awake. You're good. How's your week been?
It's been a very busy week with a lot of chores that I've had to get over, but yeah, excited to be here. And like, this is what I enjoy doing. So yeah, happy.
Yeah, no. I really want to just start this conversation off with like, dude, what the fuck happened on Juno?
Yeah. So I joined kind of like the end of 2022, where I came on underneath Notional and realized that that was not a company for me. So got into Juno normally, and Jake Hartnell paid me out of pocket. And then I don't even know if he's been paid back yet or not from the Juno Foundation, which is pretty crazy. So then they officially hired me, and I was kind of told the story that we would have multiple people helping me out. Like the roadmap was kind of set, and it never actually went public. And so I was kind of sold this almost false dream, and I continued working on waiting for that to happen. And I was like, this is not actually going to happen. Like, there's no funds. We could barely afford me, let alone someone to help. We tried to get someone on part-time, but like between what I need to already do plus teaching them for someone that's not even full-time, extremely difficult. And I just kind of got to the point where they're going a completely different direction than what I think the chain needed to go. And I thought it was just time to cut ties.
That was pretty straightforward. And for anybody, I mean, how did you land on Juno before? Let me backpedal that a little bit. Who was Reese before Juno?
So before Juno, I was on Craft Economy, which was my first ever job. So I came into the workforce, like I'm working on my bachelor's degree, finished that in about 92 days. And I'm like, I'm so bored to tears, like doing this bachelor's degree. I need to get something. I had previous experience with Minecraft. I ran the 9th largest Minecraft server in the world in the past. Like, I've got experience on the technical end. I just need someone else that can come in from the marketing side and the operations to keep the front end of the user experience continuing to churn and bring in new players. So I've had that experience, and I'm like, I don't really want to do that, but I would like to be on a larger official project where it's, again, not just me running the entire show. So came into Craft Economy, began to build up their product there. We finally got it. Microsoft shut us down. It's all open source though, so anyone can really go still run it today. We were super excited about that and kind of got to the point where, okay, I need to go find a new job. Was reaching out like AWS, Archway, and then Notional, because we had worked with them. They kind of talked me into, hey, we know that we weren't the best here. We think that you can actually help us out. Let's try that. That very quickly did not work. And that's what brought me into Juno, because I was supposed to be the lead of Notional on Juno. And so like, I kind of like, they put me into that position. Then they realized that I was going to be leaving Juno. And then Juno was like, hey, we should probably hire you because like, you're doing a ton of work here. And so then they hired me out back from underneath Notional.
I want to get into Notional here in a little bit. And I think you know where this is going to go, but Jerry, go ahead.
Can everybody in here retweet the space? Reese too. I think there's some people on the Juno side that still follow you.
Done.
Go ahead.
It's all right. Reese is like, is like a goddamn machine. He's like done. the Notional Labs. It's such a controversial team. I don't even know where to begin. Just now that I'm really letting it sink. I mean, first their place, I didn't realize there was a level of involvement with Juno. I mean, then it was Luna Classic. Now there's White Whale. And then Lord knows what else is next. Jacob Gedicke, and I'm going to say his name just because he's such a public figurehead. And I mean, it's so hard for anybody who's caught up. But as far as like the conflict, some of the headbutting, you know, and then plus there was some news that had got out about how the company was, I guess, treating their devs The impression that I got was like they were more being treated like a slave labor force. They were being undercutted. Was there ever a point in time that you felt like that by any stretch of the imagination?
I would say kind of, but in a more indirect way, since I was the only remote employee. I had at least a understanding, like some of those things that were going on based off of talking with other protocol engineers there, which in a different country, you have different expectations and things. So that was fine by me. Then they began to come after me because they were jealous of my salary versus what my skill set was, which was still underpaid for the market. And so like, I already felt that very early on. I was like, this is kind of weird because of like just the whole culture of the company. And that quickly rolled over into other things where just the way that people acted towards me or just that lack of like self, that lack of respect was definitely a key part of why I left very quickly. Cause I realized like, there's no way to just turn that around once that's already hit. And I'm like, I've not even talked to most of these people. They've just kind of decided on their own because like they speak Vietnamese. I don't speak that. And so they just kind of like ganged up on me and I was like, yep. And I'm out. So that was a very quick decision that I made on my behalf just for like sanity's purpose.
Well, I mean, given the past 2 years, especially in the crypto ecosystem, whether it be Juno or anything outside of it, I mean, you stay on Twitter long enough and not touch enough grass, your sanity is going to get lost in the shitter. I mean, I'd imagine that, you know, being the only remote employee for any company that's halfway around the world, I mean, building that camaraderie around the other coworkers or colleagues, I mean, that's going to be, I don't want to say next impossible, but next to it. I mean, you were never given the opportunity to build any kind of relationship, it sounds like.
Yeah, there was no opportunity to build anything there. And like, we were willing to try, but as soon as they realized what my salary was versus what they were making, which were they underpaid? Yes, but they also did agree to that. And I agreed to something higher. And, you know, Jacob really, even though he didn't own the full share of Notional, kind of made all the shots, and they didn't like that, of course, but it kind of showed that with how he handled their shares as well, of like, basically you have no shares, it's worth zero, despite it definitely being worth more than that. So it was more, someone doesn't have all the shares, but they can still make as if they were doing all the shares, kind of like standard crypto governance, just in the real world, not very legal.
Right. Right. And then, you know, and then, I mean, Jacob was also the point man as far as establishing and building relationship with crypto communities and validators, structuring deals, pretty much the account executive. At least that was my impression on my end, on the outside looking in.
Actually, Jeffrey did a lot of it, Notional COO. He did a lot of that behind the scenes of like how to actually run the company. I would say he was more the CEO, and then Jacob was kind of more just the marketing person, as I saw it. And of course, marketing is kind of part of the connections, but Jeffrey sure. ran a majority of that.
Okay. So
I'm going to say something controversial, okay? Because I'm on the outside looking in. Not only marketing, I would consider that he might have been in charge of the drama department as well. Is that possible?
It's definitely possible. It may have just been a department of one, though.
I think that statement was made along the lines like during Notional Labs' time with Luna Classic and Jerry and I, amongst quite a few of them, a few of us in the community got front row seats to the shitstorm that landed on the blockchain, and especially with the L1 task force at the time when Zardar was still around. And there was a lot of back and forth. The conversation diluted into a very polarizing conversation, and you know, it was really hard for anybody to cut through the noise and to make sense of what the current situation. And you know, the impression that I got, and I can only speak for myself, was that this was typically normal behavior representative of Notional Labs as an entirety, and nobody gave two shits about it. Not the community, but those within.
All I know is the shirts came off.
Oh, Jesus, man, dude. Oh, man. Oh, dude, I'm trying to forget that video I saw with him and Don Kryptonium, where they were doing I guess a podcast with their shirt. Oh my god, dude, I just about throw it in my mouth.
I will say it was as chaotic outside as if it was inside. Like, it was just as bad inside of like what's actually going on. It was just kind of everything's thrown at the wall. Pick it up and like work on 8 different projects at once, despite the company paying for. The external companies paying for one person to work on a single project. Like, ridiculous stuff.
Wow. So who was really the one not necessarily pulling strings, but giving the team or the company as a whole a direction of what the goals are, you know, like a mission statement? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Jacob would kind of give mission statements, as in like a 30-second, hey, this is what we should do, okay? And then Jeffrey would come back behind and then actually clarify, like, no, you kind of do this instead. Like, Jeffrey was, I would say, the one, like, again, leading the company. He's excellent.
Okay, all right. And then, but is it better, is it, help me understand this, because it's hard to separate the individual from the company. Because anything that Jacob was doing was reflective of Notional Labs, because it's not like anybody stepped in and tried to try to put a stop to how he conducted himself. Like him making extraordinary claims. And I'm saying extraordinary because of what's the word I'm looking for? The sensationalist approach that he took when he was claiming security issues. And I really want to take this opportunity to get some clarity from you, at least from your perspective. From someone who was working on the inside and looking outward, was there really any security issues? I mean, I guess it depends on who you ask. It doesn't seem like a black and white issue, as I'd like to think. But what was it? He was making claims that all nodes was. Am I saying this right, Jerry? I think you have a better understanding.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, blockchains. When they have their proof of stake blockchains, and Reese can probably explain this better than I can. The security has a lot to do with how spread out the nodes are, and all right. Nodes on Luna Classic specifically had essentially control over a lot of people that were using them as a service, and all nodes could, if they wanted to, halt the chain, and that was the security risk, so to speak. Even though their business model doesn't really. I mean, I don't think they would be motivated to do that, but they could. And so I don't know if that was the same case on Juno, Reese. Can you elaborate?
No. So Juno is different. I will quickly talk about the all nodes thing. It's a security risk, but not a security issue. There's a big difference. One is like, hey, this could happen. And if it does, it's still like it's a downtime risk, which in blockchain world is like kind of considered okay. Like it's not ideal, but that's better than losing funds. So it's a security risk, and in the event that something did happen, you can modify the chain very quickly, probably in a couple of days with the correct team, and relaunch it without all nodes at all. And so like that can be resolved. On the Juno side, it's purely other people do work, and we're going to say that this is a security issue, despite like without even knowing if it actually has any implications for the code base or not. Like you could import something but never use it, and now Juno is a security risk if that repository had some issue put against it. But the thing is, like, we may not even use that in any terms of what the issue was. They don't care, though. They just see, oh, security issue, let's report that and make a big deal about it. And that's kind of what he's done on almost every chain at this point. So I've dealt with this all the time. I understand where issues are, what we're using it for. And so some things I ignore, like we don't use it that way. It will never affect our code base, even if we modify things. And they believe, no, we have to get that in, because if we don't, everything will be hacked. And it's like, that is a terrible assumption to make on actual security events.
So that pretty much sums it up. So, I mean, is there a reason behind it? I mean, is it somehow trying to scream for relevance? Is that
marketing and scare tactics, where if we're doing a private release for a security vulnerability that's come out from some internal repo, we coordinate that with teams. We say, hey, don't make this public, because we want people to be patched before something could happen, such as shutting it on chain or a loss of funds, whatever the case may be. And their team is more than happy to open that and make it entirely public to almost get marketing out of it, which is like, great. Now you've just jeopardized all of the chains that we're coordinating with, like tens of billions of dollars worth of funds are now at risk because of the team deciding that we want to use this as marketing. And we've seen that two or three times now where we're almost to the point, if there is a security event that needs to happen, like teams that work with Notional are like kind of set to the back of the list because we need other teams to be secured first before we take on that extra risk. So teams that work with Notional are also like in part of the risk factor. And so they become more risky by working with them. And it's actually like a net negative cycle.
Yeah, I always noticed that people that were at least at your level of competence when it comes to development were never alarmed at certain things, such as Zardar was never alarmed at the security risk on Luna Classic. He took more of a approach like you would and looked at it that way. But you said it would only take 2 days to resolve. I think 2 days to resolve for someone like you, I don't think everybody understands the level that you're at compared to most people that are working in the Cosmos. Because, I mean, we had a conversation before and you said that, you know, certain things don't take very long to fix. But, you know, junior devs and devs with not as much experience as you, it might take a little bit longer than 2 days. But maybe not. Am I wrong in that assumption?
I believe I mentioned like a team. Like typically for these kind of events, you have a small team. And that way that everyone's working together. I mean, even like myself, if a event happens, like it's not just me working on it, it's multiple people because each person has different experience and understanding of other chains that have gone through similar things. So if your team has worked on only Terra Classic, you've not run into these issues. But if you reach out to others like Strangelove or Juno that have had these issues where they've done these migrations, they can forward you in the right directions and branches and in code of what to grab, what not to grab, and kind of lead you on the right path. Typically, the patch time is a lot shorter, like maybe a couple hours, versus the actual rollout, which is what takes all the time of coordinating with validators, doing all of that stuff, is what takes a majority of the time because people are on different time zones, and that's quite difficult.
Okay, so I don't know if I'm making an unfair assumption, but at least from based on what you just previously said regarding yes. Certain specific said teams where individuals take the opportunity to use it as a marketing tactic. I mean, it's almost reminiscent to like to the fear porn that we see in mainstream media. But given that, I mean, it sounds like this most of the drama bullshit that we see on Twitter, Discord, whatever the text channels that we see or interact with, I mean, that could all be easily handled internally without even trying to, I guess, blast it to the public just for the sake of, because, I mean, I don't understand why, other than a marketing tactic, why anybody would want to go down that road to just blast it out like, hey, we have a security issues. And with what expectation should the public do about it when, I don't know, 99.9% of the general audience aren't devs? Like,
yeah, it's completely a scare tactic and just trying to one up other teams that are Jacob sees as competitors to himself, whether that be Strangelove or Informal, etc. And I agree, there are things that other teams can be doing better on the security front, but there's so many security things that you don't ever hear about because it's handled properly behind the scenes. And Jacob hasn't been able to make a big deal about it because we worked with other teams directly rather than working with him or teams like, for example, with White Whale, where we had a security patch that went out. We went out to, I think it was like 10 or 11 teams, including Terra and Luna Classic. We worked with all of those teams privately. It worked out great. And as soon as White Whale heard it, because Jacob was running that, it became very public. It was mentioned. The Amulet team had to get involved. Like, this is not how you perform it. Everyone else has done fine. And so we've had to take that into consideration with security releases of we can't allow you to have that information until we get other chains patched. And that was also the case for Dragonberry. As soon as Dragonberry came out, which like affected the entire Cosmos, they were one of the last teams to even know about it because they needed other bigger important chains to get fixed first before it became like somewhat public of what was going on, because that's just what they're known to do, which I think is extremely detrimental to the security of Cosmos and your assets.
One can make an argument that by prematurely blasting out to the public, it would create more vulnerabilities. And this is, again, I might be going down a rabbit hole or a conspiracy theory that telling,
like, I was thinking the same thing. It's like, yeah, you're announcing, hey, we have security problems, and you're announcing it publicly, then anyone that can actually exploit it, they might be listening.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's like, you're like, those is like, oh, like, put a target and attack me here, 'cause I'm vulnerable here. And then to add insult to injury, then you have additional, unfortunately, I would say, like, these are reckless influencers who will take that and amplify that message even further for the sake of, I don't know, one can assume that, you know, they want more followers, interactions, clicks, without any adherence to, like, hey, you know, you're not helping here. You know, going back to Juno, I mean, you mentioned Jake Hartnell. To my understanding, I've seen him in multiple spaces. I've interacted with him quite a few times. He's the co-founder, one of the co-founders for Juno, right? I think.
Yes, and also Stargaze and DAODAO.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I was gonna say DAODAO as well. I didn't know Stargaze. Now that's new. What's his relationship like? Because make sure I understood this correctly. You left Notional Labs to come over to Juno because Jake poached you, correct?
Yes, out of his own pocket. So I don't even know if he's been paid back yet, but he paid me. I think it was an 8% bump over what Notional was paying me to join Juno, and I was there for like 3 or 4 months. And then Core One at the time decided, yeah, let's take them on, and then hired me out of their own treasury.
Yeah, no, I mean, to my impression, like, Jake was always a great guy, and, you know, if he saw a talent that was worth it, he took the risk. Given what's happened, because I'll be honest with you, like, when I saw that you had left, man, dude, I just sold everything Juno related. I'm just saying. I mean, I'm grateful for meeting a lot of cool people in the Juno community. It seems like the political climate there is not much different from Luna Classic. So there seems to be a parallel, but the way I've always seen it, it was like, it was two very different demographics. And I know I mentioned this before in our pre-call when we talked, I'll say it again. It's literally like the Titanic, and Juno is the demographic that sits at the top at first class, smoking their cigars and wines. And I know Gus is down there, so, because he's always drinking wine. And then Luna Classic is the plebs, the plebs at the bottom, always partying and drinking beer. I mean, that's just kind of how I viewed it. I could be completely wrong, but I mean, I'm not gonna lie. Luna Classic, despite its shortcoming, it always felt like that's where the party was at.
Yeah, I think so too. They were, Luna Classic was like a step up from Juno, which was crazy to think about, you know, being in the heart of it. And it's like Luna Classic, like, you get in for one day and it's like 100 days worth of Juno drama all in one. It's like, wow.
This is really? So
yeah.
I always felt like Juno was always.
So you were really involved there with Juno PSX. So what are you going to say? Because I cut you off there, or your mic stopped. Juno was more what? Reese, can you still hear me?
I can't
hear you, PSX. Try again.
Let's do a quick mic check.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah, I think you rugged a little bit. What was that about? You know, like, Luna Classic was, we were one step ahead. Like,
were you talking about the drama? Because he said that Luna Classic was a step above Juno in an aspect. Clarify it, because PSX missed out on.
Oh, that. Yeah. Because I said that I always felt that Juno was like 10 steps ahead of us, but that wasn't the case. I mean, what's the disconnect, and why was Juno struggling to keep up? At least, am I understanding that correctly?
Well, technically, on the technical side, it was falling behind. I joined and worked my butt off to get it to a point where it was very close to the latest of everything. I think at one point we may have been the latest of everything, which is great. So like we were staying on top of things, but just from the governance and the drama side, that has always been what Luna Classic has always had, that well over Juno, despite all of the Juno drama. I think Luna Classic takes that one for the first place trophy.
Yeah, probably right. But that's fine, because I think it provides an opportunity for lots of discussion to happen over a period of time. I guess there's some drama like we've discussed before. Some of it doesn't produce results. A lot of it doesn't, but that's despite the fact. I mean, it is what it is. But I'd have to agree, because I didn't see as much, but I know, PSX, you were more involved in Juno than I was ever. So what was your experience?
I mean, it was, Gus is down there. So it was definitely a difference in mindsets of, as far as how they viewed, I guess if you want to call it the ethos, the blockchain ethos, you can start there. There was, DAO was the center point of the conversation at the time. I didn't even give myself the opportunity to dig further deep into it, but at least from someone who dabbled into it, it was DAO Enterprise before DAO Enterprise was part of our conversation in a nutshell. And you know, there was a lot of, in the beginning, there was a lot of hype and conversations surrounding Juno and the excitement of where the chain it could go. But even at the time, that's when I discovered Reese. I hadn't met Reese yet till months later. He was, and I'm going to put you on the pedestal here a little bit. So I know what you're going to say, but there was a lot of people that could almost argue like Reese was the dev that came around and saved Juno. I don't know what had happened other than Juno, like during the crash of Terra, like Juno was there to help them out and then got dragged into the mud during that time. And then on top of that, like when the dust settled, everybody was kind of just trying to figure themselves out and where to go from there. There wasn't as much, nowhere near as much as drama that we were experiencing on Luna Classic. It was definitely much more of a homogenous community. Even when I was in these different spaces, Gus included, there wasn't the bickering that we experienced on our end. It was very much open discussions. I mean, maybe a few debates here and there, but it wasn't intense. I think with Reese's presence, it gave them a center point to focus on, and I think that's what really helped propel them forward. But then you fast forward up until as of late, like somewhere down line, it was like a fuck all moment with Juno, and I'm wondering in my head what happened. I didn't get a chance to DM Reese because I saw the announcement. I mean, what was it like? It was like a month or two ago that you made your final upgrade.
Yeah, it wasn't meant to be public yet, but because the communications members department decided that, hey, we're going to make this public of like, you should either work at Strangelove or at Juno. You don't get to work at both, despite my results showing that I was doing both just fine. I decided like, okay, I was going to originally wait till after the upgrade happened, but mm-hmm. because of the traction, I was like, well, that's kind of, you know, they're kind of pulling me in one direction and saying like, you need to choose either one. And so I'm going to let people know I've already chose one. And so I made that public then. And that was like January 19th. So yeah, about 2 months ago.
Okay. So you were working with two companies, Juno included. There was no, and again, we just talked about this in the beginning. There's no non-compete.
Yep. And also I'd been working for Strangelove since like September. So people didn't even know that. And I'd been working for 3-4 months and everyone was still happy and I was still producing products. But at the same time, like, yeah, mentally I was like, yeah, I'm not really interested in this because of just the focus on governance. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. But like, what about all the other things that we had discussed and talked about that were on the other roadmaps that were never released?
So what's Strange Love? Can you give us a brief on that one? Because I've
it's the quickest way I can explain it is it's like Notional, just without Jacob, where it's a engineering house of companies come to us and we want to help build out their product. And so doing that, and that's now spun off, and we have a separate entity called Role Chains, which I am moving to, where Jack and others will have like a 7-person team, and we're going to be raising off of that. And that's to improve Cosmos user experience and to build up this Celestia DA connection layer for proof of authority chains, where we're building very permissioned chains, which I'm very excited about.
Real quick before we go to Jerry, can you nest any information to Love or Role Chains in the Twitter space? I mean, maybe there could be something there for anybody who wants to get involved. I like to see what there is, if at all possible.
Yeah.
Thanks. All right, Jerry, go ahead.
I was just going to mention that I think the difference between Luna Classic and other chains, as far as drama goes and people disagreeing with each other, is Do Kwon himself kind of set us up for that, because he created a new chain, and then some people didn't want that, and other people were okay with it. And then you got this immediate dichotomy of philosophy between 2.0 versus Classic. And there's still people that are heavily in 2.0 that are still involved in Luna Classic, and a lot of those individuals don't agree with the rest of the Luna Classic community. They have their own mindset on what direction things need to go. So I think that's a huge, huge part. And what do you think, TheraPSX?
Oh, I was going to say that almost reminded me of, what was it, when ETH forced itself, there was going over to proof of stake away from proof of work for the sake of saving energy. And there was a big brouhaha within the ETH community on which one held more value. And then I remember somebody else telling me that when, I forgot who it was, and he quoted, I'm going to quote him if I can remember who it was that told me that to better look at it, it was like, God, I hope I get this right. Forking a chain is equivalent to committing some type of fraud. I don't know, like something along those lines. Reese, you have a better understanding of this than I do.
Yeah, for every chain forks, if any upgrade is technically a fork. It's the different kinds of forks, though, because while yes, it's a hard fork, there's the like classic fork as well, which I think is more so what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. But like, that's part of upgrading and modifying it. If you want a chain that doesn't do that, cool. There are not many of those. There may not be any of those now anymore. So yeah, that would be its own project, and it just becomes obsolete. Like if you want to be breaking the latest tech with blockchain, you probably need to be able to upgrade your blockchain to have the latest tech. And if that's not what you're interested in, I don't really understand the use case, unless it's like very specific and narrow, in which case the protocol is very limited, kind of like Bitcoin, where like, sure, you can build some stuff on top of it, but like not really.
Okay. And then just to quickly kind of dial back a little bit, did Jake didn't have any issues with you working with Strangelove at all, did he?
No, everyone was very supportive. I let Core1 know ahead of time, like, hey, I'm going to be joining here. And so they were like, that's fine. And as long as you continue doing your work like you do. And I continued on that as if nothing had happened. But I, of course, became more vocal against, you know, at the same time. So it kind of like worked in both ways in my favor.
Who was front running that conversation as far as them, him or her having issues with you working on two different teams?
Highlander made that public. But I think it was more just out of frustration because of my negative sentiment towards Juno. So I think it was more so just like, I'm saying the things that need to be said and no one else is saying. And maybe I'm the only one that thinks like that and everyone disagrees. And if that's the case, cool. But yeah, I think it was more so just, you need to choose one. And people also thought like Strangelove is controlling me to do these things against Juno. Like Strangelove is working on things that actually make money and people care about. They don't have time. Like, we've talked about Juno like once or twice, like in the time I've been employed there. It's like not a focus at all. And if it is, it's normally just like a laughing thing where like we make some jokes about it or something. Like there was never like I've seen conspiracies like Jack's controlling Reese to sabotage the chain. It's like, no, Jack's working on building another company. Like that's a lot more profitable to do than take down a chain you can't even short.
Sounds like we're going about to go down some rabbit holes here in a bit. All right, let's focus on Highlander because this is new. I get the feeling like this individual reminds me of a few individuals we've experienced here on Luna Classic. Highlander, his problem, is he a dev?
He is not, but he's becoming one. So he's currently working on like Rust contracts and things like that.
Okay, so his experience is still in process of building into a like his own personal portfolio is.
Yeah, his main work is like he runs Juno Communications, so running those calls, doing video editing, sound, etc. I think he also runs the spaces, and then he may now be working on like the articles and stuff too, along with Tony.
Okay, so this guy is definitely more on the marketing side, wanting to shift over to developer side, and then somewhere down the line, he started making, or his, I'm trying to phrase this correctly, he's trying, no, that's not a good way of looking at it.
The way that I would...
Go ahead.
So, from the marketing side, of course, Juno holders don't like the way that I was speaking about the chain. Totally understandable. Whenever you're going against someone's investment like that on the contrarian side. So he comes from that angle and then was now moving more into the developer side to be able to assist and build up things on the chain. So he's got a different way of looking at things than what I do, where I'm purely on the development side and kind of speak my mind. And the communication side does not want everything that comes into my mind to be public. Totally understandable, but that's the way that it was. Like, we're two very different viewpoints of how we think that the chain should run and how we handle those situations.
Do you think there could have been a better clarity, like at least some kind of protocol in place where, like, hey, if you're going to say something about Juno, you need to speak with the communications department if they have one?
Yeah, I think that's the new way that things are going. But I was, even if that was the case, like, that's not exactly how I follow things, which I'm kind of, whenever you're pretty much the only person on a department, like you kind of are the department, which I had been for like the past year before the charter and things came up. So I just handle things a different way whenever I'm at Strangelove, because ways were set in stone of like how communications happen right out the gate. Like, okay, I'm good with that. I agree with that. And I've not made super public comments because I understood that coming in and with change and those things happening, like, yeah, it just didn't mix up well with the way that I was handling things, because I was leading it more like kind of like a co-founder, despite just being a standard engineer because of my understanding and back end talking with the Core One team, et cetera.
Okay, so I'm going to leave this position here in a bit. So basically, the underlying issue was that the expectation with Juno wasn't set previously versus when you coming on to Strangelove, they had an expectation already set out there, like in the beginning before.
Yeah, and a new expectation was being set of how things are getting handled compared to previously. And I was handling it differently from what a standard, like if any other engineer came in, such as Joel, who has now also been ousted, comes in. Yeah, Joel's out. He's actually joined Strangelove now because we kind of saw this coming. So, yeah. Well,
who's on Juno?
I think Demi, I believe, is the only one running it, which he's got other things he's got to handle, like operations and like his own validator business, et cetera. So, yeah, it's more just Juno is entirely just maintenance mode right now, and like high security issues. So yeah,
for a guy Highlander, for a guy to make, it almost seems hypocritical that the conversation between you and him could have been better held behind closed doors rather than go out into the public.
And we've had many private ones where he comes to me like, why would you say this? And it's like, because I believe it. And so he did the same thing. He said something that he believed. So it's kind of like eating your own medicine there. And then, you know, I replied back to it with letting the community know, like, yeah, I'm out of this. I kind of already gave hints to it back in like December, where I was like, yeah, you know, I've sold a majority of my position, waiting on the rest to unbond. And I have like sold almost everything. I think I have like 1,000 Juno left now. So like, you know, I'm going to let the market know ahead of time. They can front run me, but that was pulled forward even more than what I expected there, because I was going to wait till after it was done. Cool, that's done, and now I can quietly go.
I'm trying to assess, like, It sounds like two wrongs don't make it a right. You know, in my mind, there was a time when you, when I had connected you with the L1 task force, when LBA prior before the doxing of one of our friends, his kids were involved. Unfortunately, there was a bit of an outcry within our community at the time that involved you. Because of, I think, to, if I can, I vaguely recall, like, there were some services that were allegedly used, that you provided to the team, that they, the L1 task force was accused of charging the community for. And when that was brought up to my attention directly from LBA, he said that that was not the case. That was just ported, that whatever it was that you provided to the team, they just moved it over to Luna Classic. And then somehow, I'll have to go back into my DMs. You were caught in the middle with, in multiple space. You were getting pulled into different Twitter spaces. And as I recall, Demon Monkey, I don't know how much you know about this, Jerry. I know, like, you and I have been kind of busy on our end, but, it seems like there were some accusations being made toward that specific situation.
Not aware, but I'm not surprised. But Reese could probably clarify the situation since he was right in the middle of it.
Yeah, on the services that I provide freely, I built FeeShare up for Juno. I reached out to other chains of like, hey, who kind of wants this? And Bill from Luna Classic, one of the community members, was like, hey, I want that. Can you do it? So in a couple hours, I put it up. There was also another upgrade at the time. And so that kind of got put to the back burner, and they moved that into their like funding request for the next time. But it was confusing because it was like, you guys are asking for funding for something that someone else did for free and getting paid for it. And they were handling it more like a change log of like what was coming up. But it was still weird of like, that's part of your funding request, despite it already being done. And so it confused me as well as other people of like, you're asking for money for something that someone else did for free, and you want us to pay you for that despite you guys not doing anything. And so there was definitely a big confusion there with how both parties were handling like the different aspects of, we're asking for money and here's the change log as well, which was not really their change log to give. So yeah, it was a little confusing.
Okay. So that's where the disconnect was, and then you weren't notified till afterwards by some community member within Luna Classic. Is that right?
Yeah, I was notified by just someone random was like, hey, yeah, they're no longer using your stuff. And I was like, what? So I was like, it's been like 2 months since I implemented that, and something had broke on their end. They blamed it on me. And then I think the next month, the Terra 2 launched it on their mainnet. And I was like, see, nothing was wrong. Like, this is like running in two production systems. If Luna Classic can't do it, that sounds like a you guys thing, not my code thing, which is what they were originally trying to blame it on.
Fuck. All right. Well, thanks for the clarity on that one. So what's the next step? You know, Strangelove, like, what's the roadmap looking for you?
Yeah, so I've been at Strangelove since September. I've built up things like Ethos Stake. I've worked on some other like interchain tests, local interchain. I've had some IBC work. I've done some security vulnerabilities. So I've written a ton of blog articles. So I've been all around the block at Strangelove. And part of that is Jack's had this idea for how do we improve chain user experience for developers? How can we take a developer that is just like a standard Web2 developer? They don't know any blockchain. We abstract away all of the setup. We give them a template. We make it easy, allow them to modify it, make it modular. And then also, how do we make money off of that? And so that's now become role chains, which we started work on a couple of months ago. I've been working on user experience and the flow of how to create a new chain. And since then, we've now launched that. We've made some big partnerships with other companies like Stride. We'll have some more in the coming weeks as well, where they want to integrate our work and our modules, et cetera. And so we'll be raising off of that. So I'm super excited about this because we're going to take all of the best of Cosmos and put it into a single product and then ship that and sell that and help other developers to get into Cosmos quickly and build out proof of authority chains or proof of stake or whatever your product is. That's what we want you to focus on, not the infrastructure to set it up. we handle all of that for you and abstract it away. So I'm really, really excited about this.
This is a tooling system is what it sounds like.
Yeah, a tooling platform is what it's more of a platform, because we're going to give you everything from running the infrastructure, validators that you want to use. You can build up your application logic. If you don't want to do that, we can ship that over to Strangelove so that those engineers can build it. We'll have front-end basics for you. So you can either use your own front-end team, or hey, you can take out another team such as Cosmology and hire them out. So we're going to have all of the services that you need to get your idea into production as quickly and as cheaply as possible. And we want, at the same time, for anyone that wants to be able to do this, you don't even have to talk to us. You can just go launch your product using our code, because it's all open source. And so you can just go do that yourself if you don't want to spend any money and you'd rather take the time to go learn it all and do all of that. So we're giving both options there.
This is almost like the Adobe photo. Well, now I wouldn't say the Adobe of Cosmos, but it sounds like we're more focused on just creating builders at a very streamlined pace. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, and we're focused on application builders. We have enough infrastructure. All of the infrastructure is there today. Some chains continue to write like a rewrite of infrastructure that's already implemented, just so it can, like, I mean, I guess you get funding for that, but we don't see a purpose in that. We're going to take the best solutions out there, having partnerships with others that we'll announce, and be able to just use that where, oh, you want to hook into XYZ? Cool. Just enable this toggle. It takes like a couple of clicks, and then now you're integrated with that. And how do we do that and allow roll chains to be successful, as well as bring up other developers? And we're going to have like full tutorial platforms of, hey, here's how to do a test net very easily, and how to interact with that, how to write code and do all these things. So that way that standard engineers can come in and build this up and build on top of the platform as well.
So I wouldn't have to worry about becoming like a full stack engineer.
No, you would just, you can come in, scaffold a chain, proof of authority, token factory in less than 60 seconds, have a test net up and running, and then you can just go figure out, okay, I want to maybe build a IBC transfer. Whenever it gets sent to me, I take one of those tokens and I save it elsewhere. And then we'll kind of like help you guide you through that, and either through mentorship or just through contracts or whatever, depending on the protocol. So yeah, we're trying to target everyone that wants to build an actual application. Noble was kind of the first example of this that Strangelove built out. How do we do more nobles in the ecosystem for specific applications?
So I don't need to have any kind of developing experience. Maybe some basic understanding, but it sounds like I don't need to have any kind of experience whatsoever.
To launch a token or a proof of authority chain, you could, with like Cosm Wasm, so like you could essentially build up a Juno on the latest of everything, like actually latest of everything, today in a single command. You would then talk to the roll chains team and be like, we want to launch this, help us with it. They'll give you a quote or whatever for the number of nodes that you need per month, or like the actual cost of running the infrastructure. That's all handled for you. It gets launched. It's in production, and now your chain's out there. And so we're going to have other features as well, such as saving that data. Like let's say your proof of authority, because something like Noble, where you want to ensure that that is always the case, you can then upload those blocks to Celestia, the data availability layer. And now all of your state is there, and you can sync and use RPC nodes on Celestia. So now not only do you save money by having a smaller validator set, but you get all of the economic security of Celestia and the infrastructure. So now you can use them for your infrastructure, which saves you costs on having to pay for those nodes, because Celestia is running it, and it's part of the payment service that you would do uploading your blocks to Celestia. So like we're really utilizing what's already out there and give you the full advantages of it in multiple areas of the stack.
I remember you telling me that you created some type of protocol where through a flip of a switch, Web 2 can onboard themselves to Web 3. Say like if they had an application that was more geared, that was originally built on Web 2, they can quickly swap it over to Web 3. This sounds like the next best thing. Regarding that protocol that you mentioned, hopefully I said that accurately, is that still something that you're trying to pursue, where you want to see Web 2, if it makes sense for these specific types of applications, to come onto Web 3?
Yeah, right now we're kind of at the V1 of that, where you still do need some Web3 experience if you want to like fully build out an application. You can either contract out Strangelove, you can figure it out yourself. We'll have those documentations for you to explain how to do all of this. But that's our target market now. In the future, this is kind of my own, what I would like to do is have a no-code solution where it's kind of like those blocks that you put in of like the iterate a couple of times. I think it's called Scratch, like something like that for Web3. And then you just copy paste that or import it into your project. And now your project has what you wanted that logic to do. That's something else that would be a nice to have, but is not part of V1 currently. We're more targeting developers to see where the rough edges for these edge cases. We can fix that and we can move into V2.
Okay. Jesus Christ. I'm trying to absorb everything. I swear to God, every time you talk, my IQ feels like it's shrinking. I say that a lot, by the way. Yeah.
You know, PSX, there was some code that you had that I think that you mentioned that other blockchains had access to, but then Terra 2.0 ended up adopting it recently. Can you go into that a little bit? Because I remember we talked about it a while ago, and now it's just not fresh on the mind.
Yeah, so Terra 2 implemented FeeShare, which is the public module where you have a contract, you upload it to the chain, and then 50% of gas fees get split half to stakers and half to the actual developer who uploaded the contract. And that can, of course, be changed, where if you change who owns the contract, the fees now go to that person once they decide to update the withdrawal address. This is similar to Archway. However, we actually launched it before Archway even went mainnet, or they may have been testnet, but we didn't use any other code. It doesn't require forks of the SDK and Comet BFT, which takes more engineering time and et cetera. It was a simple solution that gets plugged and it just works. So we've had that. And then also some others have implemented Clock, like Ellis Network, who's joining the economic or the ICS for Atom. They're using, I think, FeeShare and Clock, which is some other things that I worked on at Juno. I think there's like in total, there's like 6 or 7 chains that are using one of these two features, and that continues to grow. So been very, very excited about that.
And that has nothing to do with what you offered Luna Classic that they decided not to use or
doesn't. I gave FeeShare, which is what Terra 2 is using, to Luna Classic for free. They were the first chain to implement it besides Juno, and then they decided not to use it for some reason, for some technical reason, which it worked whenever I put it up. All the tests passed, everything. Like I tested it manually, I tested it automatically, it all passed. And then they did some upgrade. It broke that feature, which was not on me because I didn't run that other upgrade. And then they weren't able to use it anymore. And that's however they're handling that fee, their community pool burn tax, whatever, like that's what's breaking it. And as we discussed on the pre-call, like it's not a good solution because it's breaking other solutions. It should be able to work despite that. And so it's just a bad design there.
And yeah. I remember that discussion because you mentioned that getting the tax and the transaction, there was a solution to it and someone that was already utilizing it, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah, and FeeShare is like a very similar solution where we're splitting 50% to stakers, 50% to users. That's the same instance as splitting 90% to stakers and 10% burn. It's the same logic. It's just done with different amounts. Just handle the logic differently. Like all the code's already written. You swap out the numbers and you're done.
So how long would it take?
Well, I don't know how bad the code base is. I've not looked at it in like a year, but assuming that I would, given the way that it's been described to me, I would say it's going to take a little bit, probably a week for maybe two engineers to like fix that and just follow better Ante or post Ante handler. So yeah. I mean, but again, if there's multiple modules that are dependent on the way that it works now, you've got to go unwind that, which becomes a lot bigger of a headache. You've got to fix testing, et cetera. So it depends on how spaghetti it is within the internal usage.
The impression I get, it's real spaghetti, like real spaghetti, like chopped up spaghetti, like, and nothing but raw tomatoes that haven't been cooked down yet. That's how bad the burn tax, because it's... The way JG described it to Jerry and I was that it's a layer built. The burn tax is a code base layer that's built on top of the on top of the entire layer one chain. Which, you know, when Syncom was reaching out to us, he described it as you know, something that should take you like a day or two to knock out is going to take you a month or two to figure out, you know, and then,
yikes.
Yeah, it's that bad, unfortunately. You know, and I mean, we're grateful that, I mean, we're very fortunate that that white whale was willing to take that leap and expense time and resources to getting a contract with us. But it was, I mean, you make a little, you fudge one little number or code, I mean, you fuck everything. That's how bad the burn tax does. It does more, I mean, I don't know if it does more harm than good, but the
it makes you write more code in the smart contract is what it does, because you have to compensate for it.
So we have straight. I mean, we're fortunate to have Straight Coal looking into it. I mean, I'd like to maybe elicit your. I mean, I don't know if there's anything you can do until that part gets fixed, or anybody else.
Yeah, because that would need a redesign to fix it, where someone else can implement things like fee share that don't break. You should handle the 10% burn tax as soon as the transaction comes in. Handle that, and then start doing all the other logic, where if there's a 50-50 split, it should be 50-50 of that 90%, not of the whole 100%, because then by the time you get to the end, you're trying to take fees of 110% versus what was like actually sent in. So yeah, it's just accounting stuff that blockchain people don't really know how to handle, which is like, you got to focus on the user experience too, not including developer user experience, not just it works, let's ship it.
Right. Well, it's like, unfortunately, we're the community or the validators. I mean, everybody voted on, and this is going to bring me to my next question, voted on the hype train, because we were running on a burn narrative. I think we were one of the first to make it mainstream. But there seems to be like a really huge knowledge gap. And I was in a Cosmos Joe space, and there seems to be like a real serious knowledge gap between validators and devs. Or do we have, is there ever a case where we actually have validators that do have devving background?
Yeah, so there are a couple that have devving background, but I would say the majority are, if they are technical, it's not in the actual blockchain, like direct on-chain protocol stuff, which is completely understandable. That's a small niche anyway. I would say majority are either focus on DAOs or front ends, or just like standard Web2 tooling or infrastructure, which is what validators are supposed to do, is run infrastructure. And putting validators as protocol-based politicians, I think, is the wrong way to go. And they're way overhyped versus what they're supposed to do, secure the chain and sign blocks. So yeah, it's just, they're put in a position that they shouldn't have to be put in, but that's kind of just how the job's lined up for them.
Great. And there's no, you don't have an idea or anything that would help mitigate that?
No. I mean, like on Juno, we've had upgrades, and maybe there's two or three validators out of like a set of 175 plus that actually will like look at the code and check over things. And I would assume that's kind of the case at other networks as well. I know that the Cosmos Hub, they fix this, is they have a long checklist of like every possible action on the chain. And so every day for a couple of minutes, they run some action to check these things out. So they're just checking it like brute force, and other, that's just their solution to it. Because again, not everyone needs to know how the protocol works, but to have people that don't know how the protocol works voting on the technical implementations for things is not the exact way to go. It should really be more up to the users, who also don't know how things go. And so you just run into this chicken and egg problem.
Great. Sounds like actual real politicians that we deal with in Congress in the US, where we have elected leaders who don't understand the real issue, yet will support policies that yield negative return, is what it sounds like.
And everyone's trying their best. But again, right. if you're blind leading blind, it's never really going to end up very well.
Right. So it seems that behavior hasn't really changed, or not that their intentions are bad or anything. I mean, it almost sounds like you know, the road to hell is paved with good intent. Oh man, I'm so depressed just thinking about it.
Well, we are, if you don't mind staying a little bit over time, Reese, appreciate it, because
yeah, I'm good.
It, Okay. I don't know how PSX feels about that, but this conversation...
I'll make an exception.
Okay, it's not over yet, so I think we need to continue. My thing about the whole thing is, you know, I get it. You know, maybe validators are thinking politics and devs are thinking just progress. But when it comes to blockchains like Luna Classic, the solutions are there. But like you said, it's like you're trying to chase something, but it's like you're running around in a circle because you're fixing one problem, creating another problem, fixing that problem, creating another problem, because the infrastructure from the beginning is set in a way that doesn't provide a nice user base for the developers. So maybe, and I would love to do this, and you know, maybe you already are in contact with Strathcole and Fragdude, because they're having discussions about the tax thing. They might not be the ones actually coding it, but they are talking about it, and maybe you have a solution or you have some ideas that they haven't thought of.
Yeah, the people that are designing it should really be like entirely developers, and others that are not developers should focus on what are we actually trying to accomplish here? What are the what's and the why's? And then allow the developers to do what they do best and actually fix the problem. If non-developers are solving the problems, you're probably running the same problem as before, where it's, again, the blind leading the blind. So developers should build the stuff and others should focus on what do we actually want at a high level and allow them to figure out the technical details. Trying to mix those two becomes a nightmare.
Well, Strath is a layer two and Frag's a layer one. So, but I mean, I don't know skill level wise in comparison to where you're at. I mean, Frag's pretty good, but I mean, I don't know what the comparison would be. You know what I mean?
It sounds like it's a simple solution from a how to implement it. It's more so just how do we untangle spaghetti into what the solution should be to make it a better experience. So I think a junior developer should be able to come with how do we want to do this? Because I've actually trained a junior developer who was able to solve a problem similar to this. And it's more so just they probably can't also handle how to take it from what it is now into that. And my doing that migration is probably more of the knowledge gap versus what's the correct way to do this.
So there's a possibility that this problem could be much more simpler than it really is. Possible. Doesn't mean it is.
Yeah.
It's possible.
The solution's simple, but the implementation, like you said, depending on what's already there that needs to be restructured code-wise, therein lies the issue.
But, well, and then,
you know, in the long run, it would be better for layer twos. In the long run, it'd be better, more efficient layer one, and easier for devs on layer twos to be able to implement what they want to implement.
Like it's or short run, because if they could get it fixed a little faster, you know, really short. I'm just saying. And then, okay, so. Oh crap! I lost my train of thought. I know what I wanted to ask, but I can't remember it now. Ugh.
I mean, the thing is like there's a huge burn narrative. I can't think of a better word than faction. Sorry, PSX.
Yeah, I hate you, dude.
There's people that like that aspect of Luna Classic. There doesn't need to be any reason for it to go away, but if it can be implemented in a really smart way inside the transaction code, where it's not affecting, you know, complex smart contracts that do multiple transactions to transfer money. If that doesn't happen, you're going to have layer twos coming up with different solutions to bypass the tax. And then instead of having transactions in Luna Classic, they're going to be having transactions in liquid staking derivatives that don't get taxed.
How do you bypass the tax other than a whitelist?
Liquid staking derivative will bypass the tax.
Really? Yeah. I did not. Okay.
Because they hard-coded the values for what's accepted fees.
Okay. Okay.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's one way to get around it.
Yoink.
100% LSD.
I was like, they just totally yeeted that code right there. I was like, holy fuck. It's like, really? Okay. I did not know that. I learned something new today. I mean, assuming they get this thing coded, I mean, then the second challenge is to put put it up to governance, the Medium article, and all these other steps you got to take, and then the real fight starts when, well, you know what happens when once a governance proposal that's high profile is being put up, all the news catches it, and then you got all the influencers, whether you're for it or against it, starts weighing in, and then becomes the real shitstorm.
I honestly don't think there's gonna. I mean, I don't think there's gonna be people against it. I think there'll be people that maybe not agree with the way it's being implemented, but as far as against it, I don't think so, because it's forward progress for the chain in the long run. So it's, I think the argument's going to lie within how it's being implemented versus whether we implement something like that or not, because everyone wants more transactions on chain because that's what gets the burn going. And if layer twos are complaining about the way it's the tax is implemented currently, and they want some type of solution, you either layer one comes up with that solution so that the transactions are still getting taxed like they want, so that the burn narrative persists, or layer twos come up with a solution themselves, and then there's no tax from their solutions because there's a way to do it on layer two side where it's not benefiting the burn narrative. Am I wrong, Reese? Because I'm doing a layer two and I'm not a dev, but I've been thinking really long and hard about it. And these are some solutions that I've talked to devs about, and they explain it better than I can.
Yeah, if you're using a LFC to bypass what's paying for it, you have all this complex code that's not even being used because people want to get bypass it so that way the protocol like actually works.
So why not fix it at the layer one so that that's not even...
Which is where that's where you have to fix it to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, because right now layer twos are like, I'm telling you, they're motivated to come up with solutions to fix their issue. So if they're motivated to do that, then what does that do to the chain? I mean, Luna Classic isn't going to get burned even though there's more volume. It's because it's getting bypassed through a liquid staking derivative, right?
Yeah, so you're really just playing on the marketing narrative without actually having the technicals to back it up, which is whenever that hits and people actually learn about that because someone makes it public, then that's when you're in real trouble because you did all this work to build it up and you've had all these struggles and then someone just bypasses it. So you've argued all this for nothing because it doesn't even matter in the end since people are going to find ways to bypass it. You don't actually fix it the correct way.
So in a nutshell, we're selling a car without the engine.
Yeah, but you're marketing it as if it has two engines because you're just that great.
Okay.
So it needs to be fixed on the layer one side because I'm like, I can tell just because I'm on the project management side. I'm not a dev, but I can tell you that it's a concern for me coming up with a complex, not even a complex layer two, but a layer two that will be affected by the way the tax is right now. And I'm literally having conversations with dev like, hey, this is what's going on. And they've already gave me solutions on the layer two side. So why not fix it on the layer one so we don't have to do this? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like make it so even if people did decide to like try to bypass it, like you'll actually still get those fees. Like there's some common sense here that needs to be put into place where any fee that comes in should be getting burned. And if it's not let's just say it's not Luna Classic, it's a derivative or something else, put it into a module account, hold it there, and then you can use some other module in the future or multisig or something to go swap it all to Luna Classic, bring it back and burn it. Like there's options there where just like leave it there until you figure out a better solution rather than just letting it kind of just be bypassed into the ether.
Kind of sounds like we need someone like you on the Luna Classic side, but...
Buy him a beer.
What?
Buy him a beer. Buy him two cases of beer. Or get Gus to buy him some wine. He's down there. He heard me.
Dude, there's... In the NFT spaces we do, me and Ness, there's a guy that has an NFT project called Wolfie's Bar. And if you buy one of his NFTs, he sends you a beer. And it's a small amount, but like, not all countries can get it, but I think we could do that, Reese, if you'll work for beer.
Love it.
Yeah, there you go. And croissants. I think they make like in-house croissants.
Well, that'll set aside. But I mean, the community pools and all these Cosmos chains typically are big enough to be able to bring somebody on of a high caliber. So I don't see why it's not realistic or even plausible, in my opinion. But I definitely want, if you haven't talked to Straithful, he's a very intelligent layer two dev. And then Frag, which he's pretty dang good. I don't know if I don't think he's at your level, but, and I don't know his resume, so I really don't know.
We're not here to swing anybody's dicks around. Okay. We just want people to shake hands, get along, sing kumbaya around a fireplace, roast some marshmallows. It's kind of like the ideal environment I'd rather be in.
I'd like to just, you know, throw it against the wall and see if there's a relationship you guys can build there, and maybe it can be mutually beneficial down the line, because, man, Straith has helped me out quite a bit with a couple of my projects, and he's a wizard on the layer two side. And
assuming that there's no non-compete conflict of interest on your end, Reese.
No, yeah, I'm good. I don't have any of those, thankfully.
Maybe in the next conversation we'll have, it'll be in a roundtable space. Would you be open for that?
Yeah, I am, definitely.
Dude, Reese, it's been great. I don't have anything to add to this. I mean, well, actually, I lied. I do have a lot, but we're going to go on for another hour or so, and it's like, all right, 15 minutes. I got to get going here in a bit. Ness, I know you've been listening quietly. I wish you would have chimed in.
Yeah, the conversation was going so smoothly, I didn't really want to chime in. You guys touched upon pretty much everything I could think of, so.
Ness, that's such a cop-out, bro.
Hey, give me a break. I'm really tired, guys. I do have some stuff I'd like to ask Reese, but it really didn't pertain to projects too much. It was more focused on Reese. But we are out of time, so I'm not going to ask him.
All right. Before we wrap it up, really quick, Reese, dude, thanks a lot. I know you and I are going to be in a few spaces here and there and shoot the shit or Discord or whatever. Really, really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day and talking to us and to our audience. For anybody else, if you want other updates on Reese, please give him a follow about rolling. What was it? Rolling. Chain, was that it?
Roll chains. Yeah, it's in the nest.
Gotcha. There you go. And these protocols, they're going to be, last question, they're going to be able to interact with anything within Cosmos, including Luna Classic, despite its stupid burn tax.
Yes, IBC will be enabled on all of them by default.
Holy shit. All right, go ahead.
I wanted to add one more thing, PSX. In our pre-call conversation, Reese, you mentioned IBC and Solana in the same sentence. Is that something that the Cosmos can do or no?
Yeah, it's possible. And definitely Bingo. Should be done.
That sounds amazing. So that's exciting just hearing that that's possible. And there you have it, guys. Reese has some knowledge that's very valuable. And so glad you guys came on and we did this. And I'm looking forward to the roundtable.
Awesome. And for anybody else, we do have Astro Vault as a quick little brief announcement for our next episode. Guys, thanks for hanging out, and you guys have a good weekend, and we'll see you next time. Have a good one.
See ya.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ends dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days. Got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these token knocks. They probing this bear, flexing broken knives. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known a politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists.
jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss, and I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Click the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary fall. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of dental lace, stacked and non-toxic, just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage, like the shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible, when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Beats, tearing apart your community. All these low-hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege. Commanding all the management to grab a few seats, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the verbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served.
Channel Spaces.